Thank you for downloading our inaugural show, One Mic, One Voice, a show that is created to give space where your voice, ideas, and informed opinions can be heard, appreciated, and debated. Please sit back and relax and enjoy the conversation. Welcome to the One Mic, One Voice show, Building the Collective Conscience, a show that is created to give space where your voice, ideas, and informed opinions can be heard, appreciated, and debated. I'm your co-host, Michael Eric Owens, along with Deshaun Thornton. This being our inaugural show, what we want to do is first start off by telling you a little bit about ourselves. I'm from Milwaukee, Wisconsin, been in Oklahoma about 6 years. I have degrees in history, political science, and law. I've also was in the Navy for about 13 years, sailed around the world, saw many different things, served my country with valor and honor. And I'm also the author of the book titled Yes, I Am Who I Am, A New Philosophy of Black Identity. But enough about me. I have my man, my co-host in here with me, Deshaun Thornton. Brother, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Mr. Deshaun Thornton, I am born right here in Oklahoma City since birth. When graduated from St. Gregory's University, obtaining a bachelor's in sociology and a bachelor's in psychology, master's in Lankson, Oklahoma City, and in counseling. So I serve as a licensed professional counselor for youth and families around Oklahoma City area. Just looking to start a conversation up, get some minds sparked to do some things differently, or just maybe start up another conversation.
Sounds great, brother. So we got some education in here. You have your master's. I have mine. So maybe we have some master conversations.
Let's do it.
And, you know, it's interesting because although we are living in the information age, we are inundated with a proliferation of information. Where can your voice be heard? When our leaders are not filling the gap that has historically divided us, where can you turn to? When ideologues continue to have free access to the mic, and the pundits spin the mainstream dialogue to support their dogma, how do we strengthen a weakened democracy? Well, Deshaun, I'm so glad they asked those questions. One Mic, One Voice fills this increasing gap. While our show is not designed to solve all problems, it's an antidote to this pathology. And so, you know what? We have so much going on in the news. I mean, it's just crazy, right? And from what we just heard about with the Iran deal, and that's still waiting to be, you know, Congress is waiting to weigh themselves through that debate. And, you know, just from the political to the to the mainstream pop culture, what I wanted to do is on this inaugural show, man, let's talk a little bit about Bill Cosby.
Man, let's talk about this guy.
Let's talk a little bit about Bill Cosby. Man, share some of your thoughts.
Man, you know, Bill Cosby has always been an idol figure in the black community, especially as far as what it's like to have a male figure in the home, somebody to be admired, somebody to be looked up to. And that is spread, you know, throughout his longevity of his career. People have idolized Bill Cosby for so many years, and he's been such a part of our childhoods, watching the Cosby Show growing up. Man, it's really sad that these things come out so many years later, you know, after this man has put all of his time and effort into building his brand up and then to have it shot down. It's interesting.
Yeah, I mean, you're exactly right. This iconic figure, man, this as everybody's been calling him, America's dad, right?
Right.
And, you know, the Cosby Show. And matter of fact, I'm going to date myself here for a minute. My first movie, man, was Let's Do It Again with him and Sidney Poitier.
Okay. You know?
And so that take me a little ways back, okay, right? I was a young kid. Let me just say that, you know, might have been.
That was the
you
first
know, my mom's took me in the stroller in there, you know. But, yeah, I went to the Riverside in Milwaukee, man, historic, you know, theater in the black community. And you know, I idolized, you know, like so many, you know, Bill Cosby and the great work that he did, and to see the tragic fall. And you know what shocks me though, D, is this idea of this dude was young. He could have had anybody he wanted.
Any woman he wanted.
Yeah, I mean, he was a smooth looking brother, talented, money. in Hollywood. I mean, it's got to be a sickness.
And you know, and the thing is, you know, even though we say, you know, he had reached this level of status that pretty much willed him to any woman that came into his contact. Man, when you get that money, it just seemed like you do whatever for the women, for the limelight. It just,
but
it's different levels, I guess.
It is, and it feeds into this stereotypical way of looking at black males as being hypersexed and you know, wanting to conquer anything that comes our way, and the abuse of power, you know, because, you know, we know for ourselves that, you know, we can't speak for one another. You know, the black community is not monolithic. No community is. However, you know, Bill Cosby all of a sudden represents all black men. You know, right. I mean, like, we all go down because of what, you know, Bill Cosby did. He's a great dad, and all of a sudden we take on that persona, man. So, you know, it's got to be a separation between Bill Cosby, the person, and Bill Cosby, the, you know, the comedic genius, mm-hmm. which he was, man. And we judged him, again, this goes back to, you know, how we see each other, man, in society, how we build and erect and put people on pedestals. We get to the point where we recognize that this person was just a human being.
Right.
He may have been talented, and he was talented. However, he had demons. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's interesting that you say that, because I think it's important now, especially with the social media and things like that, that you go viral in a matter of seconds, you know, the wrong thing happened to you. So it's that that past of us seeing superstars and people on these different platforms is important or infallible, when that's not the case at all. We are all human beings. We all make mistakes. We all have our own demons, like you said. But, you know, having somebody like Bill Cosby, who is so important, it kind of takes a different a turn. Maybe hurt a little bit more,
yeah,
to see that happen to somebody like that.
Well, it shatters our reality, mm-hmm. right? When we based our view upon this image of others, and you know, Hollywood has a way of projecting that into our lives, and when that reality, which is a non-reality, which is a fantastical world, right, that becomes our reality, then all of a sudden, you know, we're you know, just grossly impacted by it. When at the end of the day, Bill Cosby is just a man.
Just a man.
That's trouble.
Just a man.
A talented brother, that's trouble. And I feel sorry for the women, man. You know, I mean, the thing about it is, just think of trying to come out against him at his prime. I mean, you know, nobody wanted to hear that.
Right.
I mean, they, you know, you weren't going to talk negatively about Bill. You wasn't going to do that. And so, you know, my hat goes off to them for their courage, for them coming forward and standing up, and for the vindication. And this is something that he's got to live with for the rest of his life.
That's right.
And but, you know, hopefully, you know, all of us are living with something, but hopefully we're not living with something that deep. You
right.
know what I mean?
Right.
But he does not, you know, I mean, this is a point I want to get across to our listening audience. Cosby does not represent black America. He does not represent black males. He represents himself. Just and, like you and I mm-hmm. represent ourselves.
And I think it's important that we are having this conversation right now so that we can kind of dispel some of those myths and some of those stereotypes that are labeled on black males, just given our skin tone.
Man, that's a whole nother conversation, brother, that we definitely gonna have as we move forward. Our inaugural show. I'm so excited to be here with my brother, and we're excited to bring you One Mic, One Voice. Again, Building the Collective Conscious, a show that is created to give space where your voice, ideas, and informed opinions, keep in mind, we did say informed opinions, can be heard, appreciated, and debated. So guess what? When we open up the mic, you will have the mic, but make sure you do your homework, okay?
Correct.
Because we want to share knowledge. We just don't want to be talking heads. We want to make an impact on our culture. And I got to go back, because I know this story, man, it's kind of died out. But let's just talk a little bit about Rachel Dolezal. Let's talk a little bit about about that situation, man. And I laugh because sometimes, you know,
Deshaun, you, for me, I have to laugh instead of cry, man, because it's so dispelling to me. But let's talk a little bit about, you know, man, where were you at? You know, how did you receive this news about this?
All right, so when I heard the news about Rachel, man, I was actually on Facebook. Obviously, it's one of our better news sources these days, as far as spreading information quickly. So I was like, she did what? Now, mind you, I had just had a conversation with some people about the whole NAACP movement and how it started, and the originators of that foundation were not African-American people.
Absolutely.
And so I felt like maybe she took a stance where, you know, being of African-American descent would make her feel more impactful in her position.
Yeah.
And so that she would go to the extent of making herself a black woman. Now that's something, that's something totally different. We're talking about a pathology here.
Yeah.
I mean, to wake up every day and feel like you are that is really something to be concerned about.
You know, man, I'm like you. I was actually, I saw it on Facebook, and you know, what is this saying about, you know, our critical analysis of news, but believe it or not, a lot of things are breaking on Facebook now. And so I thought it was a joke. You know, when I first saw it, I was like, yeah. What? So I just kind of went on. You know, I just, I ain't going to deal with this, right? And then I saw it surface again. And I was like, really? You know, I was like, you got to be kidding me, right? And so I said, let me take a look at this, man. And I'm going to tell you something. I was blown away. Mm-hmm. I mean, really, by, and again, in a minute, I want to kind of get into, because I don't want to be so harsh on her. But initially, I was just blown away by a person that would masquerade their own identity to fool people in order to live out who they think they are. Mm-hmm. I mean, about, man, what does that say about identity?
Identity.
Here is a woman that's born into the privileged class. Okay, so that says something about how serious she is about this change. You know, I mean, and to then to come into the underclass, okay, and live that way. I wonder if she had stayed that way if she had not been elevated, if she had just been a member, not a leader. Mm-hmm. See, some of that appeals to, I think, that pathology that you speak of. You know, I'm out front. You see some, maybe even a little narcissistic personality disorder. But I don't want to be too hard. I don't want to be clinical on her. But what I can say, man, when I read it, I was like, this is crazy.
Now, think about that for a second, though. What you just said is this white woman had pretty much underclassed herself to come into the reality of what she thought was African-American or whatever. But to think about what it is really to be an African-American male or female, the psychology is different in living this life and then seeing it from the outside. And so for her to even step up and say, you know, this is who I am, that's bold, man, because you know there are black women that I've talked to who have had a serious problem with her portrayal of what she thought was you know, a black woman. And now, don't get me wrong, there are lots of black women who look like her. I mean, if, you know, light skin or whatever the case may be, but it's different being in that skin for real and then thinking you that, you know.
Well, you speak to the option, right? The option of not having that identity is there. Okay, so that's like the trump card. You know, at the end of the day, I can pull it off. The end of the day, I can walk it off. But in reality, for a black woman, that is your end of the day. You are black. You can't change that. Man, there's so many levels to this.
There are many layers to this.
And I'm sad that, you know, that the conversation got sidebarred. You know, it got pushed to the side because I still think there's so much to talk about. We have black women that don't want to be in black skin.
Right.
And here's a white woman that then draped herself in black skin and put on black persona. And think about it like this. You know, she even took on the stereotypical ways of the vernacular of black people. I mean, that is, you know, I don't know. How do you get up in the morning knowing that you are not who you are? Mm-hmm. But I, obviously she identified with that.
Right.
Okay. And so she felt affinity for black people, that she felt maybe that she felt like there was a black woman trapped inside of her. Mm-hmm. You see, that she had to let out. I mean, the struggle, right? Caitlyn Jenner, you know, I'm, you know, not going to get into that, but the struggle of having a woman inside of you and coming out that way, man, I, you know, part of me says maybe it was torture for her to be white, you right. see.
Now that you say that, that brings me back to another thing I heard a couple weeks ago of white people not feeling like they have a culture here in America. Mm, and, you know, to identify with what it is to be white may not feel like you have any history at all.
This is true.
And so if being black was giving her some yeah. culture, giving her an identity, like you said, that may have been better than just being a white person.
Yeah.
That's being deep. A white woman.
Yeah. That's extremely, extremely relevant and extremely deep because, you know, there was a time, and I think white folks are starting to recognize, you know, there's Irish, there's German, you know, there's Greek, there's all these different cultures, but in America, it's been a disservice for the creation of whiteness, and we'll talk about this. I mean, this blending of those cultures into one, which has stripped them of that individuality in which they have this rich heritage. Mm-hmm. You see, you look at somebody and you go, "Well, you're white." Well, what does that mean? You know, instead of saying, you know, I'm Italian, I have this culture, this rich, ingrained, family-orientated culture, which everyone can fall in love with and be part of. No, you are white. Mm-hmm. And so that's deep. You know, we're going to talk about that. One mic, one voice.
Man, one more point. I have a friend, best friend of mine. He's a comedian. And he had did a joke about, you know, white people who actually know exactly what their lineage is. Mm. You ask a white person, you know, well, where are you from? Mm-hmm. Well, you know, my dad's from Germany, mm-hmm. you know, whatever. Got a little Irish in us or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then so you ask a black person, you're like, yeah, man, I'm from the east side. I know. Like, nah, man, like, where are you yeah, from? He's yeah. like, Parker yeah. States, man. What are you yeah. talking about? But it's just that joke, like I'm saying, that, you know, identity is really an important thing. Mm-hmm. And depending on who you are and what people have taught you about yourself, that's what you identify with.
Absolutely. 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 You know, Ralph Ellison said this: when I discover who I am, I'll be free. Mm-hmm. Think about that. You know, maybe this journey that Rachel has taken, maybe we're too harsh on her. You know, maybe the psychoanalytical way that we've been viewing her is unfair. Well, I'm not going to go that far.
Is it?
But you, I'm not going to go that far because I still think it's crazy, right? Man, what if I woke up and just painted myself, you know, white or something, man?
Man,
get some long, you know what I mean? I mean, that would be... I'm just thinking myself. I think it would be weird and strange, and so I'm not going to let her off the hook in that. And then to lead a historically black organization, you know, which is a whole nother conversation. But
man, it got deep, man. Like there, like you said earlier, there are many layers to this thing. This lady had went back and told people that she grew up in a teepee.
Yeah, yeah, that's right.
Like,
yeah,
man, right. What?
Yeah, that's right. She did. Yeah,
that's taking it back.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it's yeah, yeah.
We haven't even done that.
No, man. I, you know, 3155 North 16th Street, man, right off of Burleigh, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, where I grew up. I probably can tell you my phone number, my whole phone.
But man, that just shows you how deep it went for her. Yeah. You know, how you say that she might have felt like she had this inside of her,
yeah.
and how
yeah.
deep it must have been inside of her to no feel doubt. Like, man, no this doubt. Is who I am. This yeah. is this is what it is.
Yeah, that journey, as Ellison talked about. You know, once I discover who I am free. I think people just don't know who they are. And they're just so wrapped up in trying to be somebody else. I mean, this whole idea of who am I? I mean, you know, really, when you think about that, you say to yourself, you know, people have these assumptions and they have these perceptions of what, you know, who you are, you know, but still we have our own, I think, journey toward discovery and journey toward this awakening of the self. Mm-hmm. And so Ellison is saying, you know, man, you're not going to be free until you really know who you are.
Yeah, man.
I mean, you can. And there's some people, brother, in this life, man, they're in their 60s and their 70s, and they still don't know who they are. Keep it real. They lost.
Lost, man.
Okay. They lost in hate, lost in pain, lost in regret, lost in trying to and even with our young people, they lost in trying to chase what they see out in the mainstream of society. Man, I just 50 Cent, man, just claimed bankruptcy.
I seen that.
I'm like, you got to be kidding me, man.
And he had just signed what, $100 million deal with.
I know we deviating for a minute, man, but that right, man. I was like, really? You know, are you kidding? Hold on, bruh. Help me, man. This is what I don't understand, man. All of these young black men that I get millions of dollars that are blowing it, man. I just don't, man. It you know what? Now, it's statistical, you know, at this point. It's almost predictable that brother, okay, he blew up. Oh, he gonna be broke here pretty soon. I mean, that's pretty sad. Mm-hmm. I mean, what are we teaching young black men? What are we teaching them about financial responsibility and about taking care of themselves and sustainability over time? I'm here to tell you, man, that's just ridiculous. He had that deal with Vitamin Water, man.
Right.
He made
$100 million.
Like, come on.
$100 million.
Oh my God, man. That, but, you know,
they also said he had faced a couple lawsuits in the recent years that have may attributed to him losing, you know, that large amount of money. But at the same time,
like, man, he said, shouldn't have posted that video of you know, that sex video online. Let's just keep it real.
That
got him.
Him and
the other rapper, him and his
Rick
girlfriend.
Ross.
Yeah. See, he shouldn't have. You know, man, listen, give me $100 million. I'm gonna lay low. Mm-hmm. We're gonna do the one mic, one voice. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm gonna lay low. You ain't gotta worry about suing me, because I ain't gonna be posting nothing. I mean, it's to me, it's irresponsible to be given, to be blessed financially like that, and to be, I think, that irresponsible in maintaining it. And let's move beyond simply the money, but the good that you could do with that money.
And I've been reading a lot about that too. Using money to move from a position of, you know, you're doing good for yourself. Mm-hmm. You got your material things. But moving from that into a position of empowerment, man, what are you doing with your money that can help the communities, that help build schools, that help get
Absolutely.
These really deep things in place that are more important than Absolutely. Ferraris and mansions and things like that, man? It's really a waste. But, you know, the places where these people come from to be able to shine is all it's about.
You know,
coming from poverty, coming from roaches, coming from ramen noodles every other night, you know, it's a different reality when you get that first $1 million check. And it's I'm about to ball.
But, you know, I, and again, we're deviating here for a minute. But one thing I will say is that you have to surround yourself with people that keep you grounded.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can't necessarily, you know, I know the partners I hung up and grew up with, man. If I had $1 million, they would be the wrong influence on me. I'm gonna keep it real. You know what I mean? We have to break ties, okay, if I want to do something and keep myself doing things positive, because what we were doing back then, it wasn't positive. Mm-hmm. Okay, so now you're going to give me $1 million. Now I'm going to do something positive with you. Oh, that's not going to happen. Mm-hmm. Okay, so you have to, it's a new journey, man. And you have to cut ties. And as you said, you know, it's so true. It's about empowering others. It's about using what you have, whether your gifts, your talents, your money, using what you have, man, to empower and to make someone's life better. better, right, to open up a door for someone, man. And the only reason why we move through the door so that we can keep it open for somebody else to come through. Mm-hmm. Too many of us move through the door, man, and we don't just shut it. We nail it down. We got the drill. Yeah. You know what I mean? We see the brother running toward the door, man. We see the white brother running toward the door, and we trying to drill it up because we're afraid of losing what little we got. Mm-hmm. It's not about that, man. It's about empowering all of us, man, no matter what our race, what our color, what our culture. It's about the human race, man. And one mic, one voice, that's what it's about. Everybody having a voice, you know, right, wherever you coming from. But make sure it's informed, though. Mm-hmm. You know, I got to say that. We're going to keep it.
Man, you know, that's interesting because, like you're saying, we're such a diverse collective group of people. And, you know, we're so quick to knock each other down just based on what our own reality is. And the truth is that there is some truth to all realities. Mm-hmm. Whether we want to believe it or not, based on where we stand in our own lives. But at the same time, we have to respect that somebody else has come along and been through something different than us, have done a little bit things a little bit different than us. And that has to be in some ways respected.
Yeah.
Even at a ground level, if we're going to debate about it, okay, maybe you can shed some light on something for somebody who did not come up the same way as you and be able to change that mind frame.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, I'm here to tell you, brother, I have to bring it up. You know, I wanted to stay away from this topic, man, but I'm looking on Facebook and even some of, you know, these people that I consider friends, you know, the Confederate flag, man. I'm like, you know, and I've
seen some true colors come out, man. I mean, I ain't gonna lie to you.
I've been trying to analyze it, man, because I don't want to. Because I have unfriended some folks. I'm gonna be honest with you, man. I don't want to pull the button like that, or push the button. But sometimes it's just over the top, right? And when I thought in my book, man, I talk about South Carolina in the sense that, when the president was running for office, things changed for him in his quest for the presidency in South Carolina. And, you know, South Carolina motto, which is I love South Carolina's motto. It is, while I breathe, I hope. While I breathe, I hope. Man, I love that motto, man. And I just think it's, you know, it's a great way of looking at life, that while we still have breath in us, man, there is reason to hope. There's reasons to go on. Anything is possible. South Carolina being the eighth state in the Union, man, in May of 23rd, 1788, it became the eighth state. And this controversy of, first of all, man, just talk to me about the death of the nine, man, at the church.
Oh, man. Man, I'm almost lost for words thinking about that, and thinking about throughout our history, there's never really been a safe place for us.
Mm. Wow.
We talking about in our neighborhoods, in our schools, in our churches even, where we can come and be annihilated at the drop of a hat. And that's a sad reality to think about, because even on your path of positivity or whatever the case may be for yourself, man, there are still people out there that want to see you gone. And
based upon what? Based upon what?
Hate.
Yeah.
Hate.
Yeah. That's skin, really skin all. Skin tone, right?
Right. And who would have thought just being a different color from somebody would cause? So, man, you know, I'm really surprised even that we're having this conversation right now. Like that our skin colors are so important that, you know, it can cause so many different problems within our society. Man,
let me tell you something. You just said two profound things. No safe place for us. When you were saying that, I was thinking about, you know, the police brutality that has historically happened in the black community, mm-hmm. racial profiling, brothers getting beat down, getting shot and killed, mm-hmm. okay? No safe place in your own neighborhood. Mm-hmm. Trayvon Martin walking in his own neighborhood, not no longer here. And the other thing is, why are we still having a conversation in the 21st century about skin tone? As if that is an indication of intellect, of the ability to achieve or to have talents, or to care or to be loved or to give love. I mean, it's archaic, man.
And what do we know is that intellectual people come in all colors, right?
Yeah, and you know what's so crazy? I've said this, man, oftentimes, sometimes even when I'm giving a speech or I'm at a conference or something, I talk about how advanced. Think about what we're doing right now. You couldn't do this, you know, a decade ago or 20 years ago. I mean, we're sitting here podcasting, right? Mm. Man, technology, man, we have information at our fingertips. We've made all these. Matter of fact, we just saw Pluto, right? I mean, I'm like, really, right? We've made all these advances, but the way we deal with one another is archaic as hell. Mm-hmm. Let's just keep it real. Yeah. It's archaic, man. We still looking at each other like, you black and I'm white, so I'm better than you. Mm-hmm. Or you white and you owe me because my relatives were enslaved. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to say there's not an argument for reparations. Let me just toss that in there. But I'm just saying, the way we look at one another, man, it is just archaic, man. And the battle over this flag, I'm like, oh my God.
So I was talking to you earlier about the different perspectives I heard from, you know, blacks who had relatives who served in that fight and seen the flag as a part of their heritage and not as a symbol of prejudice, as a sign of racism, as a sign of oppression, but something to be proud about. And that there was a little black guy that I seen, a teenager, who said he wore his school shirt, you know, with the Confederate flag inside the pocket every day. And to him, that was a really strong symbol of, you know, his heritage and where he come from and who his people were. And that just blew my mind, man, just to see a young kid had that type of mind frame.
Well, number one, he was taught that.
Right.
Okay. Let's just say that. And as we talked about earlier, this idea of where does the flag belong? Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's not. I mean, we can say heritage and we can say all these, you know, it's hatred. The flag represents, okay, to thousands of people, millions of people, a symbol of hate. Mm-hmm. It's part of the American landscape. It's part of the American narrative. Put it in a museum. Mm-hmm. Okay. I mean, you don't hang it in honor. That's the argument here. Mm-hmm. Should the flag be hung in an honor? If you want on the state grounds, now if you want to hang it at your house, you want to go around with it in your car, okay? We live in a free society, quote unquote. Okay, right. We can have a conversation about that. Free for who? But you can ride around on your truck and do all this stuff that you want. That's your truck, okay? But on the state capitol, okay, on state ground. On taxpayers, no, you cannot do that because it places it in a state of honor. Mm-hmm. And it's offensive to so many. And so I think the conversation is simply, you know what, put it in the museum. You know, we have plenty. In Milwaukee has a Black Holocaust Museum, which talks about slavery and the ills of that. We have those around the country. You know, I don't think that you wipe that from the history books because it's part of where this country has come from. And it speaks to me, it has a larger kind of connotation, right?
For sure.
Speaks to the hatred For and sure. the anger and the lingering ignorance that still exists today in our country.
For sure. Because we cannot downplay the importance of symbolism. Mm,
that is right.
And what that flag represents as a symbol is far more greater than what that flag is in its material form. The flag itself means nothing. Mm-hmm. It's just fabric and colors, you know. Yeah. But as a symbol of what that flag was for, the prejudice, the hate, the slave institutes, mm-hmm. it just is not giving the right message to those people who have to live every day in a state that honors that symbol.
You got all those black people down there, you know, and it's offensive. And they pay taxes just like anybody else. And all across this country. In my opinion, there was a war fought. Union won. The supposedly the State of the Union is good. There's one flag that represents the United States. I served under that particular flag. That's the flagship that should be flown in honor. And I think we should put this conversation to rest. You know, it's real interesting that General Lee, when he declined an invitation by the Gettysburg Battlefield Memorial Association, he said this: "I think it is wiser, moreover, not to keep open the sores of war." And even at his funeral, he didn't want any flag. Matter of fact, even the people, the soldiers that carried his body, were not in uniform. You know, Lee University, of course, is named after him. And supposedly, you know, the story says that he changed, his views changed from that. He no longer, you know, saw that as being a valid war. He wanted to see the United States move forward, put those things behind them. And the question comes up, can a man change?
I believe so. We look at Malcolm X, one of our very strong black leaders in our history. That man changed.
Yeah.
That man went from knocking women upside the head and snatching purses to, you know, liberating a nation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I totally agree. I think we can look at our own lives and answer that question. Mm-hmm. Can a man change? We can change. The sad thing is that, you know, people seem to only remember the bad you.
Ain't that it?
You know, I mean, you can clean it up. And now I remember when he was like, you know, I mean, it's just you can't escape that, because I think just negativity rules in this country. And the fact that the man said, put those things away, you know, let's move forward. No. We will say forever he was a leading general, and he led the Confederates. And we'll talk about all that stuff, because I think it speaks to a narrative that helps people understand their present condition. Mm. You see, if I can't hate you, then who am I? Comes back to that question. Right. You know, that's my whole life been based on not liking black folks, you know, or not liking white folks. Now, all of a sudden, they cool. You know, all of a sudden, I didn't befriend one, and she's fine. And so what does that say about me? Mm-hmm. You know, I'd have been living what? This lie all my life? Mm-hmm. No, I got to hang on to that, mm-hmm. because that defines who I am. And I think just the desire not to let go of what has been so much part of you, mm-hmm. keeps people in that same rut.
And we can also say that we are not very far removed from our black civil rights movement, and how fresh that history still is right now. And the people that have gone through that or lived through that are still alive today, given those customs and things they've taught their children and so forth and so on.
Yeah. The struggle continues.
The struggle is real.
One might, one voice, building the collective conscience.
What does that mean to you right there, Mr. Owens, building the collective conscience?
Well, I think it's first of all, building to me is exciting, because it means that there's some activity happening. You know, it's not stagnant. Mm-hmm. And the building has to have a foundation, and it has to be added to. And there is a completion at the end of it, and this sort of consciousness that we're trying to bring about, this the collective, that bringing together many into an understanding of truth, an understanding of what it means to be Americans, what it means to be human, what it means to be part of this cycle in which one is born and one dies. But bringing to the true reality of what that is, mm-hmm. and how we relate to one another. So this collective thing that we're coming from all different, but we're building upon that. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the day, what we're trying to seek, in my opinion, is some sort of harmony, Right. You know, you heard musicians play, and you know, you can tell when they don't know how to play, right? Because you just like, man, what is that, right? But when you sit down and you begin to practice your craft, and you get with other musicians, and you can play off of one another, then all of a sudden there's some harmony there. And then in the end, that harmony makes sense. And right now, since we're just building, it might not look like much, okay? But as we go on and we go on, it's not only going to look like something, but it's going to make a whole lot of sense. What is your thoughts?
I don't have a better answer than yours. So we're going to rock with that. But nah, man, like you said, man, just having a foundation to build and spread knowledge and share information, share ideas, try and come to a conclusion or agree to disagree.
I love that. And once we open up the phones and open up the online chats, we're going to have a whole lot of fun. And we're going to be coming to you on Facebook, my friend.
Yes, sir. Correct? We will have our Facebook page released with our first episode. So you guys are going to get some knowledge right away, have some visual right away. So be on the lookout for that. Actually, you won't have to look out for it.
It's going to hit you.
Yeah, it's going to hit you right in the choppers.
And so, you know, I just want to say, you know, it is a pleasure to co-host with you. You know, it's in life, you know, everybody meets a lot of people, and people do a lot of talking, and but they don't do producing. And you know, meeting you and knowing you for these past really 5-6 years, man, we've been together and moving toward this point, man. It is a privilege, brother. I love the way your mind works. I love the way you look at the world. And what I love about you is that you continue to be open. And we all have to be open to learning, to growing, and to becoming the best that we can be, not just for ourselves, but for everyone we encounter. So, brother, on our inaugural show, I want to say it is a privilege, Doc.
Man, likewise, sir. On our inaugural show, should I tell the people the story of how I discovered Mr. Michael Eric Owens?
By all means.
All right. Well, you got to do your bragging. Let me do my bragging. Man, I was a graduate student attending Langston University, Oklahoma City. Just trying to get some more knowledge, man, trying to diversify my way of thinking, trying to expand some ideas that I already had in my mind, and trying to figure out from a collegiate and professional perspective, was there a space for Black psychology, Black philosophy? What were other Black people saying about themselves? What were scholars saying about them? All this type of stuff. So I'm in the library pretty much on a daily basis. I went to the downtown library particularly to look for books because, you know, they had one of the biggest selections. So it was just a no-brainer to go down there. And when I started my search, I just simply typed in Black psychology, Black philosophy into the catalog search. And Mr. Owens' picture came up in his book, Yes, I Am Who I Am, The New Philosophy of Black Identity. And I was like, man, that title is jamming. What is in it? And so, you know, after further investigation, I found out that this man lived here in Oklahoma City. And I thought to myself, man, wouldn't that be cool to meet him in person? Because I know very few people that even read books, let alone have written one. So that was admirable to me. I was like, man, I got to get in contact with this guy. And for the first maybe a few weeks after I'd done the reading, I tried to figure out a way to get a hold of him, and I found out he was working at the Ralph Ellison Library right in my neighborhood, right in the community I grew up in. So I'm like, man, this cat is right in my backyard. And so the first time he was working in a kind of makeshift library they had because Ralph Ellison was having some work done, and they had this other building that they were using to conduct business out of. So I walked in there a couple times just to kind of scout the brother out. So I didn't say anything to him. I was like, okay, that's really him. I'm looking at the book. I'm looking at him like, man, this is this cat for real. And so after my third visit, I bumped into him on an accident. He thought it was an accident, but it wasn't an accident. It was really premeditated, planned out. Oh, go away. Hey, Mr. Owens, man, did you write this book? And it's like, you know, from there, man, we just rock, man. It was a natural chemistry. I take a liking to him as soon as I met him. Obviously, he taken a liking to me as soon as he met me. And it's just been great ever since, getting to know him, being able to be a part of the different functions he's put on around Oklahoma City. It's something to say about a person, man, who's actually putting the work in and not just delivering a bunch of lip service. And as I continue to grow and be who I become, I hope to be like that too, to just be able to provide results and have impact through action, not just words. And that's when I look at Mike Owens, I see him as that type of person, and it's always been important for me to have people like that around me.
Well, I appreciate that, brother. That's a beautiful story. I will say so myself. And it's always nice, man, to be appreciated. I think there's not a person on the planet that would say they would not like to be befriended or appreciated in some sense of the word. So, again, it is an honor to be here with you. And we will be back. Right?
Yes, sir.
Okay, we coming back at you.
Man, it's Wednesday, July the 15th. And this is our first show.
This is our first show.
First show.
You know, you don't forget the first show.
Can't forget the first show.
You never forget the first.
I got the iPad recording.
Now, see, I just thought of something I need to get out of my mind. The first. You can't never forget the first. I'm just going to leave that out there. See, some of y'all thinking the wrong thing. I know that.
No, I
ain't thinking that. I'm thinking about the first time I went to play basketball. That's what I was thinking about.
The basketball. Yeah, basketball. You remember your first dribble?
Yeah, I remember.
Did you start off with your right or your left hand?
Yeah, it was a right hand. Okay. I was right hand for a long time, you know. But it's again, we're going to be coming at you. We're going to be talking about these important issues that matter to us.
Reach out to us on our email, dt@onemiconeoneVoice.com. Or Michael Eric Owens @onemiconeonevoice.com. Also, reach out to us on Twitter @onemiconeonevoice.com or on our personal Facebook page @onemiconeonevoice.com. We'd love to hear from you guys. We'd like to build more of a dialogue with our listeners, be able to answer some questions, be able to cover some material through email until we get our live show up. And we appreciate it.
And anything that you've heard on the show today that you want to comment about, you want to add to the conversation, you want us to continue to dialogue about that, don't hesitate to, as Sean has said, email us, hit us up on Facebook. We're looking forward to talking with us, because we here at One Mic, One Voice understands that history will speak of us. Somewhere in the distant future, a scribe would reach down deep into the archives of our time. And what will she find? Will she discover that we overcame our differences? Will she find that out of many we became one? Or will she find that we solved nothing and remain a divided people? Yes, history will speak of us.